week, another episode of Putt Culture as we dance poorly to welcome you into this edition. Scott Hartnell joining us for this episode. It's been a few weeks, I think, since I've seen you in general, actually.
Yeah. Well, you've been busy.
I like to keep busy, yeah, Scott. Yeah. I try. But it's hard to believe the season's almost over. I mean, we are final stretch here.
Below 20 games. It's conferences are exciting. It's every game means something for these teams that are fighting for it, and it's just so fun to watch. And you know, I feel like I'm more of a fan now being away from the game than I was playing.
It's a crazy time of year in hockey. It's a crazy time for you though too. You had a baby on the way.
8 weeks and counting.
So oh my, countdown is on.
It's go time. We've had the list. I brought all the stuff up from the basement. You know, we're going to get new bottles. Washing all the clothes.
Making You're sure. crossing off your to-do list as we go.
Sanitizing the heck out of the house. Just trying to get prepared before crunch time.
And washing your hands a million quadrillion times a day.
They're dry as could be, but
with the coronavirus, I know everyone's talking like that now. Like I need like some serious moisturizer because everybody is frantically trying to avoid getting the coronavirus, and understandably so. But from a sports standpoint, I mean, we just saw the World Championships for women's hockey get canceled. We're talking about the potential for games to be played in empty arenas, empty stadiums. I mean, you played in the NHL. Could you imagine a scenario where not only are you playing in front of nobody, but it's a playoff game?
Yeah, no, it's pretty scary. And obviously it shows how scary this virus is and how much we don't really know about it, how fast it's spreading. And, you know, it's a good thing for these areas where, you know, the epicenter of San Francisco area where the San Jose Sharks play, they've already kind of said that there's going to be no fans in those arenas when they play these games. So it's scary just to how the measures that the world is going, but it's definitely needed.
Oh, for sure. I heard LeBron James say he wouldn't play. Now, maybe that's him being a little dramatic in the moment, but obviously, health and safety comes first. I completely understand why you would have to do something like that. But what impact would it have on the players? Because I would assume you draw from the crowd a little bit.
Absolutely. You throw a big hit and no one's there to cheer you on. You score a highlight reel and no one's there to, you know, obviously have a standing ovation. Your name's called and no one's cheering. So it would be really goofy and weird. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it's just bizarre and eerie feeling. Yeah.
And it just feels like, you know, when you're playing a game, you're used to having 20,000 people there, 18,000 people. And it would just be like, wow, is this the end of the world? No one's watching us play anymore. Everyone has to watch on TV. But
I'd almost rather they just postpone. You played. So what would you prefer, playing in front of nobody or them saying, you know what, we're going to postpone this for a few months? Hopefully things get better and then we'll just resume.
I would just change locations, I guess, if it's not as bad somewhere else. Maybe you can move your arena somewhere else and fans can go
playing
down there.
Playing like a neutral site or something?
Yeah, but even that's a little scary too. And I don't think we really know how serious it is. It is serious. Everyone's taking the right precautions, but you know, it would definitely be weird watching a game with zero fans in the stands.
And for fans too, during playoff time, are people going to avoid having like get-togethers to watch big games? Like game seven, like I'm still watching with my homies. Like there's no way that I'm being like, I'm not going near anybody.
Depends how bad it is.
I guess that's true. Like I don't really know. Like the playoffs are a month away, so a lot can change in a month.
This ain't wood, but
I know.
Let's pretend it's wood. Let's just hope that things get under control and people aren't ridiculous. If you have the virus, you gotta, you know, obviously stay at home, get the
in case anybody missed it, wash your hands for like 30 plus seconds, sing the happy birthday song twice. Not once, twice. Avoid shaking hands, no high fives, none of that stuff. But we hope everybody that's listening right now is doing well and taking the right safety measures, because that is the most important thing. All right, to hockey. Flyers, baby. I know they lost last night, but 9-game winning streak. They're going to fight for first in the Metro on the home stretch here. Scott Hartnell, what is going so well for this Flyers team right now?
Everybody's playing well.
The answer is everything.
Yeah, Carter Hart, that's his first loss at home, seems like almost all year. I think he's 20, 3-2 or something like that, which is ridiculous.
Living up to the hype.
Yeah. Their defense has been unbelievable. They play hard defense. They're up in the play. They're always attacking. And the forwards, the depth throughout the four lines is outstanding. You're getting goals from the third, fourth lines, if not Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, and Kucherov are lighting the lamp. And their power play has been really consistent. And, you know, Kevin Hayes obviously has had a heck of a last couple months here getting his offensive game going. He's great on the penalty kill. So it's a team that you look at that is like, you know, check all the boxes, and they've definitely check all the boxes, and they're doing it at the right time here going into playoffs.
It seems like Alain Vigneault and the coaching staff really have the entire team on the same page. You played on a team that went to the Stanley Cup final. How important is just that, not, I guess chemistry is the best word I can come up with right now, but chemistry and tightness in a group? Hockey.
Yeah, it's hugely important. You have that chemistry. You have that, you know, I'm going to block a shot for you, goalie, because if it gets through, it might go in. And,
right.
And you have that determination to sacrifice the body, whatever it is. And, you know, I love what Vigneault did at the beginning of the year. You know, JVR wasn't playing well. He got, you know, demoted to the fourth line for 2-3 weeks. You know,
everybody treated the same regardless of the money
Claude
they're
Giroux,
making.
His ice time was dipped a little bit. He wasn't on some of the power plays in a few games because he was his play dipped. And you go right through that whole locker room, everyone kind of, when they played bad, they got checked. And that... I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but it's just right through the whole dressing room. It's no favoritism. It's just like...
And that's got to, for guys that aren't the superstars, right? That's got to be a really nice level of, okay, like, yes, I might not be a top-line player on this team, but I know that if I play well, I will be given certain opportunities.
Yeah, Scott Laughton, Michael Raffle, those guys, you know, that put in their work every day at practice and are playing well, they're getting rewarded with more ice time, and they're making better plays and scoring goals, and it's if you lose your spot on that power play, you're working your butt off to get back on the power play.
Yeah.
And it just makes everyone everyone's on the same page, which is awesome.
So I couldn't help but think about the fact that the Flyers could end up in a situation where in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs they face the Pittsburgh Penguins, their old pals. You know this rivalry very well. It could be renewed in April. We'll see how it all shakes out, because it's crazy right now in hockey in terms of the seeding. But when you think back to 2012 and one of the craziest series that I've ever had the privilege of covering in sports, how do you remember it now that it's 8 years in the past?
Well, I remember us being down 3-0 right off the bat in game one, and we're like, oh man, we're gonna lose this one. And the next thing you know, by middle of the second period, we're up 5-3, and you know, then it ended up being 7-4 or something. And just the amount of goals that both teams, we had Brzgalov in that, who was not very well.
He won that series. Wasn't playing very well.
Fleury, you know, was letting in all these kind of weird goals. We were shooting the pucks from everywhere, and you know, we're up 3-0 in the series, and we could close it out on home ice. And it was April 18th. Never forget, my birthday.
You're crazy.
And we lost 10-3. If you can believe it, 10-3 in a playoff game where
that's
it's supposed
insane.
To be such tight hockey, and you know, battling for it every inch, and they scored 10 goals on us, and it ended up going back to game six. And you know, first shift, Claude Giroux runs over Sidney Crosby and then goes score, and we end up winning game six. So the Battle of Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh Flyers, is nothing short of what TV wants, what people want.
It was entertaining.
It was crazy.
It was unpredictable for sure.
It's awesome.
And it was intense. Like, what are, during a playoff game in a series like that, I mean, when you're in the league long enough, you get to know a lot of the other guys in the league. What are the conversations like on the ice at that point in the season?
Really not much conversation.
Or is it quiet?
Yeah, you know, you try and pick on Sid or Gino, and you try and get them off their game, and you know, just how heated our hatred was for each other. It was always the scrums after the whistles, and you know, which we kind of loved, and you know, we got through
you
that
were trying
series.
To get them to sort of
react
to that, because that would get them off of their game.
And they did, right? And then it was just awesome, and we end up winning that series, and we go and play the Devils the next series, never forget, and we were trying to get them involved to react to us, and they were just so vanilla, like, after the whistles, I swear to God, it got us so angry. We were like trying to, you know, overdo it, and just kind of got us out of our, like,
it almost you got a taste of your own medicine a little bit.
And next thing you know, we're down 3-1, and I think they won in five games or whatever, but it was just like we were just so trying to get that high of hatred, and the Devils just gave us nothing, and obviously it was a game plan probably, and they took it to us.
What did the team do, and maybe this isn't a thing, I don't know, after you guys won the series against Pittsburgh, was there like a team celebration? Like, what? Because you're still in the postseason, you have to focus on the next series. But is there like sort of a little bit of a celebration? I mean, in baseball we see it, right? Like they're partying right in front of cameras. But in hockey, is it the same? We just don't obviously have cameras.
No, not really. No, there's no champagne and there's no.
Well, there's no like champagne in the dressing room or anything. But did you have any sort of celebration after that series?
No, it's all business, you know, and I think that's, the teams that are very successful, obviously regular season and playoffs, you have that business mindset where every day you come in, you do your work, you put in your work, you try and get better, and you focus on that game at hand that night or on an off day in practice. So, we were very, obviously focused what we're going on, and I'm not even sure if we knew we were playing the Devils in the second round, but, we kind of got dialed up for them, and our emotions were high, obviously, coming off that emotional, Game 6 victory against the Pens, and we're like, oh, we're going to win this thing, and it was just a big, we just crashed in that second round.
Well, you would have, I think, probably more so than physically, mentally, you guys must have been exhausted from the series.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I think we even won game one.
I was exhausted, and I was watching as a fan.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Well, when you lose 10-3, there's a lot to be disappointed about.
Well said, sir.
Yeah.
You're like a Flyers fan at heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, so still. So when they make the playoffs, will you go to games?
I've been to a few games. I go up in the press box and sit with a couple of guys, trainers up there and watch the game.
Do you wear a suit?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, got a look class.
I got you.
Working for the NHL Network.
Well, hey, listen, you got to make sure you have the right threads on,
gotta
right?
You got to look good.
All right. Fair enough. Well, there's a lot to get to in this show. We're going to have to talk about these wild card races and potential predictions for the postseason and maybe some playoff series that we want to see. But you ready to get to today's guest? Because it's a good one.
I can't wait. Let's go.
I know. I'm super excited. All right. He is one half of the Boomer and Geo Morning Show on WFAN. Sports fans know him very well. We're super excited to have Boomer Esiason join us. Boomer, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, Jackie. Thanks for having me on. And Scotty, it's nice to meet you, even though I hate you.
Hey, that's not very nice, Boomer.
Well, Scotty, you were always a pain in my neck when you were with the Flyers and, of course, the Columbus Blue Jackets at the end of your career against my New York Rangers. You always seemed to have the ability to get under our team's skin and under our fan base's skin. So I've never met you in person. I'm finally glad to talk to you. And, you play a lot like my son-in-law, who happens to play for the Islanders right now.
We'll get to him a little later, but it's funny. In Philadelphia, my first, regular season game in Wells Fargo in Philadelphia playing the New York Rangers, and it was like the first period and the crowd started cheering, and it was during a whistle, and everyone's kind of turning around looking up in the stands, and there's a Ranger fan and a Flyers fan, and they're just going toe to toe in the stands, and I was like, wow, that's one of the coolest fights I've ever seen at a hockey game, and it wasn't even on the ice. So that kind of hatred in the fans kind of filtered on the ice, and I learned real quick to always get up for the New York Rangers game and try and ruin their nights, for sure.
I will say this. I'll give you two quick stories. One, I was back in the 70s, and this is when the Broad Street Bullies were at their, at their highest level, and of course Dave Schultz and that whole gritty edge game that they would play and everything else. And I've often said on my radio show here in New York when I started in 2007, I hated Dave Schultz. I had these nightmares when I was a kid and all this other stuff. So my initial radio partner had a set up a dinner between me and Dave Schultz, and I almost couldn't sit down at the table. But it turned out to be Dave Schultz is really a sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah.
He's a great dude. And much like you yourself, most of you hockey guys are great, and you are appreciate the game for what it's worth and how hard it is to play. And then the second story was we played the Winter Classic there at the Philly Stadium down in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And that was when Rupper had actually two goals in that game. Who would have known?
Right. He gave the Yager salute too. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, exactly. That we come out of the stadium and I got my daughter and my son with me, and all the Flyer fans were hooting and hollering at my daughter, who at that time I believe was about 16 years old. And I was just like, man, Sydney, we got to get the hell out of here. We just got to get away from these people. But so a couple of memories from the Flyer games and Ranger games of the past.
And sounds like fun memories, too. We love stories on this show, so feel free to share any and all of them while we're chatting with you. But you are coming off of calling the Devils game last night. Not your first time doing that, but going into something like that and getting in the booth for a hockey game, what's the best part of that? What do you enjoy most about it, and what makes you the most nervous going into calling a hockey game?
Well, the thing that I love about it most is that my New York Rangers are not playing in the game because I could not be able to do it if the Rangers were playing in the game. But I love the game of hockey. You know, I watch it incessantly. I watch you, Jackie, all the time on the NHL Network, especially around trade deadline time, which is the most fun, I think, in the NHL. And then when we get to playoffs and there's a game or two or three games every night, back-to-back, if you're a hockey sycophant like I am, you love it. So to be able to talk about it on the radio for one day is really an honor, and I take it very seriously because the guys on the ice are playing it seriously. And last night we got a chance to see the great Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin put on a show, and I thought they would simply because the Devils are all beat up defensively and they were going to really have a hard time playing against them, and it turned out to be that way. But I don't get nervous. I kind of enjoy it. I just kind of think about doing a hockey game like I would do a football game. Really the heavy lifting is the play-by-play, and my partner Greg Giannotti did an unbelievable job. He's never done it before. We did it last year once, but he had never done it since last year, and you would have thought that this was his vocation on a daily basis. He didn't miss much, and he might have gotten a name screwed up here or there, but other than that, he was pretty much on point, and certainly we enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, doing color or do play-by-play.
Play-by-play is terrifying.
Especially when you're not there every day learning the guys' names and the Russians and the Czechs and the Finnish guys trying to get all that together and do it as fast as the hockey game is. That must be pretty tough.
And in hockey, too, right? Like, they're changing on the fly, so, like, you've got to have your head on a swivel. For
well,
sure.
You know, the interesting thing is, so last year we did an Islanders Devils game, and Matt Barzal came out of the penalty box and had a breakaway and scored, and it was unbelievable. This year, the same thing happened. It was Jack Hughes comes out of the penalty box and has a breakaway, but he doesn't score. But last year, Gio, my partner, wasn't ready for that. This year, he was ready for that because of what happened last year. And, the names last night weren't too bad. There's a Kuokkanen, and that was about it. Everything else, I think we got pretty much right.
Well, Boomer, I wanted to ask you about your as a girl dad. You're someone that has a daughter, and we're coming off a week where a lot of women in hockey were sort of put front and center. NBC had a broadcast that was all female. Sportsnet in Canada had a broadcast that was all female, and we just did an all female NHL Now yesterday. As somebody that has a daughter, you know, what does it mean to you to kind of see women being given more opportunity in sports?
Well, you know, Sydney was a great athlete herself. She was a soccer player and a lacrosse player. I tried to put a golf club in her hand. She didn't take it. I tried to get her on the ice. I wanted her to be a hockey player because I brought her to so many New York Ranger games from when she was about 4 years old, and she loves the game of hockey. She just never played it. But I think it's great, Jackie, honestly. You know, we're in a different time and a different place in the world now, and there should be opportunity for everybody. It shouldn't be decided by gender or skin color or anything else. It should be opportunities given to all people, especially people who love what they do. And the one thing I will say, watching the NBC broadcast, the ladies love the game as much as the men do.
Yeah.
And they can speak it as well as we can. So I don't even think about who does games. I just want to make sure whoever is doing the game knows the game, loves the game, plays the game, and does it about as unbiased as you possibly can, especially when it's a national game. And that's what the best part of that game the other night was.
That's great. Well, to focus now on your son-in-law, Matt Martin, here for just a quick second. He was a guy that you hated to play against, and that's probably the best compliment that a guy on the other team can give any person that you're playing against. And I think I got in fisticuffs with him. I got in one fight against him, but he was always, you know, running around. I was always trying to hit him, hit his teammates, and we went to blows one time. But, you know, is there any times at Christmas dinner or a summer a holiday where you just want to go over there and just smack him?
You know what? It's kind of funny. He is such a great guy, and he truly appreciates the tradition and history of hockey, especially when it comes to, you know, the fisticuffs and things of that nature. And he knows what's right and what's wrong. And one of the wrong things he did last year, he decided to get into a fight with Zdeno Chara. And even Chara, at the age of 43, at 6'10", is impossible to fight. And I just said, you know, Matt, that probably wasn't one of your smartest moments in your career. He goes, I know, but, you know, sometimes you just got to take one for the team, and that's what he did. kid, but you know, he's such a great kid. And I remember when the Maple Leafs had him, they signed a 4-year deal with him. So after the second year, they were going to move on from him. And we sat at our dinner table 2 summers ago, and we were sitting there. And he said, you know, Brendan Shanahan called me and said, look, we'll trade you to wherever you really want to go. If you want to go to the Rangers, because we know that's your father-in-law's favorite team.
Yep.
Or if you want to go back to the Islanders with Lou Lamoriello, we'll send you there. And I remember sitting with Matt, and I said, you know, Matt, my team, the Rangers, is in the middle of a total rebuild. I'm a season ticket holder. They sent me a letter. This is going to take a couple years. This is probably not the team that you want to sign with, as much as I'd love to see you in a Rangers sweater. However, if you can get back to the Islanders and reignite with Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck, that would be great for you. And so Brendan did him a solid. They traded him back to the Islanders, and they put him with Casey and Cal, and they turned out to really have a great year last year. And then this year, all three of them suffered the freak injuries, 2 skate cuts, 1 obviously Cal on his wrist, and then Casey at the bottom of his quad. And then Matt got ran into an open boards in Ottawa. So all three have had some really weird injuries this year, and I'm just hoping that they can hang on and, you know, make it to the playoffs, maybe as the A seed, as my Rangers make it in as the 7th seed. I want to stay away from the Bruins right now.
Yeah, most people do. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this then. If the Rangers and Islanders found themselves in a 7-game series, how would you watch those games? You'd be so difficult.
Jackie, it's not that difficult for me. When my daughter told me that she had brought Matt home for him to meet me, I said, you know, I was driving, and I said, I'll be home in 10 minutes. I pulled into my driveway, went into my garage. I think I grabbed either a Henrik Lundqvist jersey or a Rick Nash jersey. I put it on, and I walked into the kitchen and said, hi, Matt, I'm Mr. Esaias, and you may have gotten one of us in this house. You're not getting all of us.
That is set
well
the tone.
Played, sir. Well
to
played.
Set the tone.
Yeah, so I did set the tone. So, look, I'm a Ranger fan, man. And they're not playing the Rangers, of course. I'm always watching the Islanders. I'm always watching Matt. And, you know, I want them to win. I just don't want them to cost my team the playoffs.
Hey, fair enough, man. Fair enough.
Yes.
Your relationship with the Rangers predates your relationship with Matt, safe to say. But sort of a win-win situation for you if they ever face each other, I suppose. You mentioned the letter there, and I wasn't planning on asking you about this, but it reminded me of the letter that the Rangers sent out to all of their season ticket holders. And it was kind of rare to see an organization go, you know what, we're just going to address this, and we're going to write a letter to everybody letting them know exactly what's going on. What did you think of that when you got that letter saying this is where we stand and this is what we're doing right now?
Well, it was gutsy because, you know, my season tickets cost me $65,000 a year. I have 4 of them, and they're down in the lower bowl. They're on the red line. And, you know, I'm a passionate guy. I go to a lot of games. And, you know, I was a little disgusted when we got the letter because, you know, I was paying for a team that I thought had a chance to win a Stanley Cup. And that's really the problem that the Rangers have had since Glenn Sather had gotten here. He had always made the team competitive, just couldn't get it competitive enough to go all the way. So they were always making these trades at the deadline, and they were sending away assets and bringing in older players. And most of the time we wanted those older players because we thought that older player was going to be the final guy that was going to get us to the Stanley Cup final. But when Jeff Gorton finally sent this thing out and said, you know what, we're going to do it the right way, we're going to try to do it the right way, I kind of bought into it, but it did cost me a lot of money. And now I sit here 2 years later, removed from that, and they sign Artemi Panarin, they bring in Jacob Trouba. This kid Shesterkin is just unbelievable as a goalie, and we have so much youth, and we have so many assets that are still down in the AHL that are still coming in from all the different drafts that we've had now the last couple of years. Now, I'm pretty excited about the immediate future of the Rangers this year, but they've surprised me a little bit. But the next 5 to 10 years, we should go on another really good run here. So I like what Jeff Gorton has done. I like the way the Rangers have handled it, and I like the amount of assets that they have and the way that they're using those assets smartly, finally, to stay young and to stay hungry and to get guys in here that are highly skilled.
Were you, I got to ask, were you at the game last week when Zibanejad scored 5 goals?
I was.
So. How was that?
That would have been such a great game to be at.
Yeah, it was. So the previous couple games that I had went to, I went to the Blues and I went to the Bruins, and I think we scored 2 goals in both of those games. So to actually do this to the Capitals and to score 5 goals – was amazing. And, you know, and when you think about how they acquired Mika Zibanejad, that's another great move by Jeff Gorton, our general manager. They traded Derek Brassard and a fourth rounder for Mika Zibanejad in a second rounder. Think about that for a second. And they're paying Mika about 5.5 AAB. And when you have that kind of number attached to the kind of production, 40 goals, is pretty impressive. And the fact that they were able to get Panarin to take a little bit less money from the Rangers as opposed to the Islanders, and then make that trade for Trouba and re-sign Kreider at the trade deadline for 6.5, I think you could see that the guys that are running the team right now, along with John Davidson, are doing really the right things. And I feel pretty emboldened to feel like, you know, the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to be a pretty good team.
Rangers are so fun to watch.
They are,
I mean,
yeah.
They are, and that game especially, the moment of the season really for the Rangers. What about the Breadman? You think if the Rangers get into a playoff spot, you think he could take a run at the Hart?
I think he can, you know, and the great thing, I didn't realize how good he was. The best thing that probably happened to the Rangers is that we hired John Davidson as our president this offseason, and John obviously came from Columbus. You know that, Scotty.
Yeah, I'm just giggling here,
right.
Smiling.
Yeah, so he knows. He knew Panarin, personally, and he vouched for him to Jim Dolan, our owner, and, of course, to Glenn Sather, the chairman, and said, look, man, you really want this guy. And I knew he was good. I didn't realize how good he was. And I think Joe Micheletti said at the other night that the game that Panarin plays most often happens behind him. In other words, he sees the ice so well, has such a hockey sense that he knows where guys are at all times. And some of the passes that he has made have been amazing. And if we can truly get a right wing on his line that can handle his puck passing ability, they'll be virtually unstoppable. Right now we're playing with Jesper Fast, who we all love as a Ranger, but we think more of him as a third and fourth line guy in a sense that he's a grinder and he's not a great receiver of passes. But, you know, they're playing really well together with Ryan Strome, and it's been kind of a surprise that Stromer and that Fast have been playing so well. But I think when you play with a guy as skilled as Panarin, I think even Scotty, he'd make my son-in-law look pretty good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I got to ask you about the goaltending trio in New York, too. We've spent so much time leading up to the trade deadline talking about how the Rangers would deal with having three goaltenders, including the King, Henrik Lundqvist. And I was always of the mindset of, like, I want to see Hank chase the cup. Like, he should go do that. And obviously the car accident that Igor Shesterkin was in kind of decided the future for this season. What was your take on it leading up to trade deadline?
Well, I was hoping that maybe Colorado would take a run at Henrik. And
yeah.
I know that Henrik would have waived his no trade had that been the case. I don't think there are a lot of people calling for Henrik, to be honest with you, especially with the number for next year at about $8.5 million. So, you know, there's still a big number there, even though the Avalanche could have fit him in. And, you know, I had all these scenarios in my mind, and that would have been the perfect place. You know, he's like our Eli Manning. You know, I love Henrik, and I appreciate everything Henrik has done for us. But, you know, in a salary cap sport, and when you're talking about a 38-year-old goalie that just doesn't have what he used to have, man, that is a heavy burden, and that's an albatross around that salary cap. So I was hoping he would have gotten traded. He would have gotten a chance maybe to go get the cup. But I'm glad also to see that the Rangers are rewarding guys that deserve to play. You know, and these two guys, Georgiev has been a nice surprise for us the last 2 years, but Shesterkin has been so calm and cool in net, and we finally have a goaltender that can actually handle the puck, which takes an enormous amount of pressure off the defense. And that's one of the reasons why I think our defense is a little bit better. It still has to get better. We got great puck-moving defensemen. I'd like to see a little bit more stay-at-home defensemen that we're going to block some more pucks like Girardi did and McDonough did back in the day. But at the end of the day, we got two good, really good goalies, and I would imagine that Hank's going to be bought out here in the offseason.
Yeah, well, lots of things to think about.
The great thing about Hank is, like, no matter where he goes for what's left of his career, he's one of those athletes that will just be adored no matter what. Like, Rangers fans are never going to not root for Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, we all love him, and just like the Giant fan loves Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Eli won some championships, but Eli didn't have great years. Henrik has had great years, but just hasn't won championships. And I would always say, and I would say wholeheartedly, that winning a Stanley Cup and winning those 16 games in the playoffs is the most difficult thing to do in all of the four major sports. I don't care what anybody says. You know, in football, we had to win two games, and next thing you know, we're in the Super Bowl. In hockey, you got to go grinding through seven-game series is not easy, and especially when you're playing within your division, you're playing these rivalry games when so much is on the line. So I appreciate everything Henrik did for the Rangers, but I also realize that, you know, you have to make tough decisions if you want your franchise to move forward, and I think that's exactly what Jeff Gorton and John Davidson are in the middle of doing right now.
Boomer, I got to ask you, did you watch game 82 in 2010 when the Flyers beat the Rangers in a shootout?
Did you score the shootout goal that night?
No, I didn't, but I assisted on the game tie goal. The Rangers were up 2-1. We scored with maybe 5-6 minutes to go, and then we beat Hank, obviously King Henry, in the shootout where he was so good. You know, then eventually we went on to lose in the Stanley Cup Finals. Patrick Kane from the Blackhawks scored an overtime winner. And, you know, going back to your career, when you were in Super Bowl 23 against the 49ers, does it still, I don't say haunt, is that the right word, but do you still think back of what could have been a different play could have changed that outcome? Do you still think about this, you know, so many years after?
I do a little bit, Scotty, but, you know, given where I grew up and where I came from and my early parts of my career and what it took to get me to the NFL and then ultimately to play in the Super Bowl, I will say the first time that I stepped out on the field down in Joe Robbie Stadium, that's what it was called in Miami back in 1989, I just said to myself, this is unbelievable that I am standing here getting ready to play in a Super Bowl. So I will never forget that portion of the memory. I'd like to forget the last 35 or 40 seconds of the game, but still, it was a great game. You know, we did lose to a team that had like 9 Hall of Famers on it, the San Francisco 49ers. But it's like anything else. Like when you get to play in the Stanley Cup, or I get to play in the Super Bowl. I mean, that, I think that's part of the journey of getting there in your career, and really truly appreciating everything that you put into your career to get there.
Yeah.
That perspective is huge, right? Like, obviously, you're always going to remember the big wins and the big losses, but I like that you just, you know, a very real memory for you is that first step onto the field for that game. Must have just put everything into perspective in terms of your entire journey. And I remember Matt Sundin saying something very similar post-career. He said, what I miss the most outside of the guys that I played with is stepping onto that fresh sheet of ice before a huge game, hearing the crowd roar and thinking to myself, this is my life. And it just put things in such a different perspective for me as somebody who at the time was, I think it was in my first year of covering sports, had been a fan my whole life. I was like, oh, wow, like that's what you think about. Like that's the moment.
Yeah, we all have those stories in our lives too. That's the thing. I mean, whether it be Scott or me or my son-in-law Matt, who had to grind through, you know, juniors and, you know, get a chance to play and then show something to somebody that somebody believed in him. And Lou Lamoriello certainly has been a believer in Matt in the way that he has played since he saw him quite a bit when Matt was going against the Devils when Lou was the GM there, and then of course to get to know him as a GM up in Toronto. So we all have a story. We all have a background, and then realizing just how difficult it is to get to where we got to, I think is the thing to really most appreciate about our careers.
Well, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you this morning. Thank you for the time. Enjoy this final stretch for the Rangers. It's going to be an exciting and emotional ride, I'm sure.
I hope so, man. I hope we get there. And Scotty, it was great talking to you, man, and I've always appreciated the way you played. I just didn't appreciate the way you played against the Rangers.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Thanks, Boomer. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a great day.
Cheers.
That was great. You can tell he is such a hockey fan through and through. I just want to say, though, like, if you ever can't use your tickets, like, I'm available. I can take them off your hands, Boomer.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh, it'd be so fun. All right, lots to get to. You know, we've talked a little bit about what's going on in hockey, and we're on the final stretch, but the wild card races are crazy. Should we start in the East or the West? I feel like it's wild in the West.
Let's go West.
Okay, so when you look at all of the teams in the mix in the West, which team do you think is the most surprising? Is it the Wild, the Jets?
The Wild, just because how terrible they were at the beginning of the year.
And they just fired their coach. Like, not that long ago, they made the coaching change.
Yeah, and, you know, they traded away Jason Zucker to Pittsburgh for Galchenyuk. He was on his eighth live. If you're talking cat lives, he's on his eighth live. He's been on a few teams. He needs to pick it up. He's played okay. Kevin Fiala has really taken that team on his back, which has been so fun to watch. He's a great kid. But I don't think they have enough to get in. I really like Nashville.
Yeah.
I've actually like hated them for a while. Now I love them, then I hated them. I know all the guys there. I'm like, why can't they put it together?
It's a complicated relationship between you and the Preds.
Yeah, they look so good, and I can't imagine like living being a super fan of the Preds, Preds because you're so high, and then they just are so bad for a couple.
It's a real roller coaster, right?
It's been, you know, and obviously Laviolette being fired, loved him as a coach, and just kind of how inconsistent they are. So I just think if they get it going at the right time, obviously right now is the right time to do it. There's St. Louis and Vegas, whichever division they line up against, the team you don't want to play at the Preds because they got some high-end talent.
What do you think has been the Preds' biggest issue? Is it scoring?
Yeah. Well, a little trouble on the back end as well. You know, Pekka Rinne has had a little bit of an off year for his standards. Juuse Saros has came in and played unbelievable, a couple shutouts and keeping the team in games. But, you know, I think you look at the forward group, they got some high-level talent that hasn't been high-level this year, probably the best way to say it. And if they can get on the right ways and get going and get hot, it's a scary team.
That's the crazy thing about hockey, right? Like, if some of those guys get on a roll and the team gets on a roll leading into the postseason, do you believe in that type of momentum, like hot at the right time?
Absolutely. You know,
happened to Tampa last year too with Columbus, right? Like Columbus was rolling.
A team that gets in the last day, last week, and you're so excited. You know, I think back of my experience, 2010, last game of the year, we get in, we're eighth spot, and we just kind of roll, and you kind of roll through teams, and your confidence is going, and you get hot, and that's all you really want. You want a hot goalie, and you want obviously your big boys to produce.
Is Vegas going to win the Pacific now? Do we think they're playing better? They look like they are, but Edmonton's making it interesting. Yeah. I know they lost to them the other night, but it's only I think a 3-point gap right now.
I'm a fan of the top guys in the league, McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah.
So I think if they do what they're doing all season long, they're going to be a tough team to beat. Even Vegas, I think, is going to have a tough time shutting them down.
Whew. All right. What about Winnipeg? Do you think Winnipeg gets in?
I think Vancouver gets in.
Okay.
I like their young players. They got a great power play, which you need. And Demko's been, kind of touch and go here, but he's made some
weathering
great saves.
Weathering the storm,
yeah,
a little bit.
Hopefully Markstrom gets back in between the net. But, you know, I'm hoping for Van and Nashville. Those are my two picks.
Those are your heart picks.
Yep. So that means Winnipeg's out, Minnesota's out, and Arizona, they're out.
Arizona.
Poor,
why Arizona?
Poor
like Arizona's like the like your friend's like younger brother that he never lets play with everybody, and like you just feel bad.
The last pick in that kickball.
It's a good kid. They're a good kid, and they just never get invited to the party.
Yeah, no.
Because they had such a good start to the season.
I know it is disheartening, and I'm sure they're just feeling it. And it's like one more loss, and they're your shoulders sink. You don't have it, right?
You know what? Even we talked to Tyson Nash, right, who covers the Oats, so he'll come on NHL Network all the time, and we had him on a week ago, and he's like, I just don't know what to tell you guys about this team anymore. Like, they're good, and then they're not, and then they're good, and then we're always injured, so it's tough to figure it out for Arizona.
Yeah, well, Taylor Hall, I think they've played probably worse since he's been there, and I thought he was going to be, the savior to kind of pick up their offense, but, when you have that top-end guy, you almost, everyone in the dressing room looks to him and be like, hey, you got to lead us tonight, and if he doesn't have it, the team suffers from it.
It's crazy because I really root for teams in all sports that go out and try to do the thing. It's the reason I was a big fan of the Columbus Blue Jackets going into the playoffs last year, because Jarmo Kekalainen was an absolute G. He's like, all right, I'm all in. He went all in on the Jackets last year, and I respected that. So I was like, I hope they get rewarded for that. And they did, in a really big way, winning their first ever playoff series in franchise history. So I look at Arizona, and the last couple years, I was like, they need more scoring. They need more scoring. They go out, they get Phil Kessel. They go out, they get Taylor Hall. Like, they tried to address it.
Yep.
And they're not being rewarded for that. And it just, that bothers me for some reason.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And Phil Kessel, this is not his best year, obviously. He's used to playing guys with like Geno Malkin and Sidney Crosby and Letang on the back end. And, you know, they do have some good players in Arizona, but they're not the level of those guys I just mentioned.
Yeah, most people aren't. Most people don't have the privilege of playing with that type of a lineup, right?
Exactly.
But I guess, I mean, it's not over till it's over, I suppose, but we'll see how it plays out in the end. I mean, it's impossible to predict. I mean, we were talking before the show, and I was like, I think Winnipeg's in a wild card spot right now. And then you're like, nope, because yesterday this happened, so now they're out. And it just kind of flips day to day, in, out,
emotional
in,
highs
out.
And emotional lows. You want to watch, obviously, the games and the results, but you can't get too high, too low, and it kind of affects your mood at night, right? You're trying to go to bed, and Vancouver wins in a shootout like they did last night, and you're like, God! And your heart rate's about 180, and you can't fall asleep for another 45 minutes. So
it has that impact on fans and on media, right? Because we all, like, listen, I know a lot of people in media like to say they don't have a team. Like, most people have a team of some kind, or at least a player or someone that they're rooting for. But, you know, it has that impact on fans. But if you're a player playing on one of those teams, is it hard not to let that impact you, looking at the standings every day, seeing what's going? Because I would assume that there's a transfer of pressure that happens game to game. Florida-Toronto is a great example, right? Florida goes out, beats the defending champion St. Louis Blues, come within one of Toronto. So now the pressure's on Toronto to go beat Tampa, which they did. Great game for the Leafs. But I imagine there's a shift of pressure game to game.
Yeah, not now. Florida looked at that game last night and is like, dang,
pressure's back on the Panthers.
Dang, we have to win to get, you know, to get close, because that's the only team they can really catch, right? So it's you hope for them to lose. When they don't lose, you're like, oh, now it's back in our court. It's like tennis, right? Okay, I got to make this shot. I got to make the next shot.
Scott Hartnell, of course, going to make the tennis analogy. I love it.
But it is, right? You have that pressure to get the ball back in play, get it over, and try and hit a winner. And Florida has to keep winning if they want any sniff of getting in the playoffs.
Do you think they can do it? What do you make of that situation? Because they have similar issues, right? The teams.
Yeah, they can't keep the puck
out there. But they have similar issues in terms of their game.
It's almost like Nashville, where I've kind of given up on them, and then they win a few games, and I'm like, oh my God, Florida's back. And then, you know, they lose a couple games, and I'm like, no, they're junk. Toronto's in. And so it's been like that the last, you know, month or month and a half for me.
Recency bias. Yeah. We just go with the team that's
I'm a flip-flopper. Call me a flip-flopper.
Oh, like, you know what, though? We all are. When you're really, it's all recency bias. Yeah. Who's playing well right now? Because that's kind of the society that we live in, right?
What have you done for me lately?
Exactly. Like, are the Leafs consistently inconsistent, or are they inconsistently consistent? Like, which is it? I'm not really sure.
I don't know. Say that.
Either way, though, whichever one of them gets the three spot, do they really have any chance of beating Tampa?
No.
I think Toronto might have a slight... This might be the fan in me, full disclosure. I grew up, you know, born and raised a couple hours from Toronto, so I am a Leafs fan my whole life. But I think about it, I'm like, is there any scenario where Tampa does not come out of the first round? Because I just think what happened last year.
Yeah, I think they've kind of paid their dues. They've learned from last year, and I think they realize how to play. That being said, you know, I think Toronto beat them a few games ago.
Well, they beat them two in a row now.
Yeah, in Tampa, and so there you go. That's you want to have that confidence going into a playoff series that you can beat them, and if it's recently, then you're, you know, all smiles.
Do players buy into the idea that, like, oh man, they've like beat us a lot this year, like they kind of had our number this year, now we got a playoff series. Like, how do you counteract that?
Yeah, you know, you look at film and you look at the goals you scored against the goalie, obviously Vasilevsky, if it's Toronto,
right.
Tampa, and you have that confidence going in. And the flip-flop, if you're Tampa and you have lost to the Maple Leafs, you're like, you know, you might get a little tight and a little bit of feeling out process. But I you know, they're all pros and they know how to play and get things done and get wins. So
who would have a better chance against Tampa, do you think? Florida or Toronto? I think Toronto, but I'm biased as heck.
It'd be kind of cool to see Florida, Tampa, you know, Battle of Florida. I don't think
Florida would be cool. Yeah. That would be interesting,
but I'm sure the Maple Leafs, they want to go down to Florida, get some sun.
Yeah, well, don't all players want to go down to Florida?
True.
No, they all enjoy that trip, true. I'm sure. All right, so what else do we want to talk about? Tom Wilson has a bobblehead, and, you know, the producer of this show, Bob Bender, shout out. Had the idea, he was just curious, and he looked up a Scott Hartnell bobblehead on eBay just to see
there,
like, what it might be going for.
A Nashville Predator bobblehead.
Is it a Predator's bobblehead?
Yeah,
okay. First of all, is it weird to have a bobblehead?
No, I was reading this book, 101 Things, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, you haven't made it unless you've had a bobblehead. Like,
okay.
You know? So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I got one.
Good. Like, I guess I made it. It's not a big deal. Do you still have your bobblehead?
I do. I have a few in a box in storage or whatever, but I do have one on display.
All right.
In the house.
You gonna let your kids play with it? Or no, because it might break.
The stick's already broken, so.
How'd it break?
I don't in a move or something, but yeah, I wonder what they're going on eBay.
Okay, so let's play a game. I know what it's going for.
Oh, you do? Oh, geez.
I do. So, do you want to just take a wild guess first without anything?
I'd say mid-20s.
Okay. Yeah, Bob Bender's in my ear right now saying that's pompous.
That's high?
I think that's pompous.
That's high?
I would have guessed that myself, but here,
word.
I'll give you an over-under.
Okay.
Over, now Bob says he's just kidding.
Yeah, I know, I got it too. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, thanks, Bob. They're like, Bob's not a real person. I'm like, no, that's actually a real person. Like, Bob Bender doesn't sound like a real name. Like, that doesn't sound like a real human, but it is. Okay, so the over-under I will set at $12. Do you think that the Scott Hartnell bobblehead is going for more or less than $12?
I gotta say more. I just said to mid-20s. I gotta say more.
Well, if
please.
You wanted to go the opposite
please.
Way and be like, oh, I'm super humble. It's
oh, no.
less than
Heck
12.
No. Heck no.
You're right. It's over. $16.99,
yes.
I believe. Bob, confirm.
There could be a bidding war and get up to 25. I got to get on my eBay account here.
It's been on the market for a year. I think you need to go buy it just to, like, make it.
Is there a buy it now number?
Yeah, right? Is there? I don't know. But still available for anybody listening if they would like a Scott Hartnell Predators bobblehead.
That's funny. That's a
good
laugh.
We should get it for the set. That's a great idea.
Come on, Bob. Get off your wallet.
It's only $16.99, Bob. Oh, my gosh. All right. I'm not sure when we're going to see you again on this podcast. So any final predictions for the season? You want to give a Stanley Cup final prediction?
Oh, boy.
Or is that too soon? Actually, no. I'm going to change the question. Scrap that. What is, like, a dream playoff series? Like, what series do you really want to see when the playoffs get here? Is it Flyers Pit? Is it maybe Battle of Alberta?
Battle of Alberta would be really cool. I would like to see Nashville-St. Louis.
Okay.
Nashville has had St. Louis's number this year. They play him hard. And, yeah, maybe I think it's going to be maybe a repeat of last year, St. Louis and Boston in the finals.
You think St. Louis-Boston. Okay, I guess we will see. But
repeat.
You know what happens with these predictions. Like, the Stanley Cup playoffs is so unpredictable. You never know. They're always wrong. But this has been a blast. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate it.
Always love hanging out with you. And Bob, you better get your hands on that bobblehead before someone else listening to this podcast does so. Thanks for listening and or watching. We appreciate the time. Enjoy your week of hockey. We'll see you next week.